It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of the big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat. Imagine meticulously managing the exact rotational direction of your ceiling fan, just so you can safely watch a reality TV star get pushed into an active volcano by a prehistoric dinosaur.
Oh, wow.
Right. I mean, I'm King, and today we are going to explore that totally fascinating psychological balancing act.
And I'm Gail. And, you know, if you are joining us to understand the, like, complex machinery of human routine, you are absolutely in the right place.
Yeah, you are.
Because our analysis today pulls from this fascinating collection of daily audio logs, community Q&A desks, and detailed social audits generated during the week of July 13th through the 17th, 2026.
All entirely within the Big Fatty online universe.
Exactly.
Because it is so easy to look at a rigidly structured daily life and just see, well, you just see boredom.
Right, yeah.
You see someone monitoring their camera batteries or, you know, obsessing over a brand of toothpaste, and you think it's mundane.
Yeah, like, who cares?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
But the mission of this show is to decode what is actually happening beneath the surface. We're looking at how a person who hyper-manages the microscopic details of his home life.
The frugal fortress.
Yes, exactly. A place the community lovingly calls the frugal fortress. How he uses that rigid structure to earn the psychological safety required to consume just absolute unhinged chaos through his television screen.
The overarching theme here is, like, survival through environmental dominance.
Yeah.
Because if you want to let the chaos of the outside world in, you first have to make sure your own walls are completely impenetrable.
Oh, absolutely.
So to understand how the host of these audio logs, Big Fatty, survives the week, we have to look at how aggressively he locks down his immediate physical and digital space.
And the digital lockdown we observed this week was intense. I mean, it was bordering on a tactical military operation.
Oh, it really was.
We are looking at a massive, aggressive rollout of the iOS 27 public beta. And this wasn't just like a casual update on a primary cellular device.
No, he pushed it everywhere.
Right. He pushed this unfinished beta software across every single piece of hardware imaginable. He specifically notes updating the Apple clock, something referred to as the sailing elephant.
Which is such a great name.
I know. The Apple snack TV, and my absolute favorite technological mystery, the hilariously named absorbent iPad.
The terminology is just so wonderfully unique to this specific universe, you know? But the underlying action is critical to our analysis here. Because consider what downloading a public beta actually means.
Yeah, it's risky.
It is inherently risky. It is unfinished, potentially buggy software. So by forcing this update across his entire technological ecosystem simultaneously, he is actively asserting total dominance over his digital environment.
Yeah.
He is demanding the newest tools immediately, and he wants them everywhere, literally risking system instability just to prove he is at the absolute bleeding edge of his own digital domain.
You know, I actually look at it a slightly different way. To me, it feels exactly like a submarine commander sealing the airlocks before a massive, dangerous dive into the ocean's depths.
Oh, I like that.
Because you don't just secure the main hatch. You secure every single secondary valve, every bolt, every digital screen before you subject the vessel to the crushing pressure of the deep sea.
Right.
He is sealing the digital airlocks on the absorbent iPad because, frankly, a leak anywhere compromises the whole ship. And he applies this exact same pressure testing mentality to his physical security, too.
Yes. The security camera battery test is a masterful example of that physical lockdown.
I found this part so fascinating. He doesn't just plug his cameras into a charger and call it a day. He conducts a highly meticulous environmental stress test.
A full audit.
Yeah. He notes how the summer weather, specifically the heat, was draining the batteries entirely too fast. Nature was essentially siphoning his power.
Which is unacceptable in the frugal fortress.
Completely. So what does he do? He brings the batteries inside, he recharges them, and then tests them inside the controlled climate of the villa, noting they only drop by 1% over a 24-hour period.
Just incredible precision.
Right. Only after validating their performance in a sterile environment does he tactically deploy them back to the harsh frontiers of the backyard and the front porch.
Because when the weather drains your batteries, nature is essentially stealing your security infrastructure.
Yeah, totally.
By isolating the variable, testing the drain inside, and deliberately redeploying them, he takes the power back. He removes the unpredictability of the summer heat.
Which naturally extends to his aggressive management of the climate inside the villa itself. Mm. Like, this week featured a very stern, crucial summer PSA for his listeners.
Oh, the ceiling fans?
Yes. A reminder to switch your ceiling fans to spin counterclockwise. He isn't just turning on a fan, he is dictating the exact rotational direction of the air currents in his home to ensure the cold air is pushed downward.
It is an absolute uncompromising grip on the physical atmosphere.
True.
And once the digital airlocks are sealed and the atmospheric environment is secured, the next logical step in this frugal fortress mentality is securing the biological vessel itself.
Oh, the hygiene routine.
Exactly. We see this play out vividly in the check-in with the SSQD, or the SOSA question desk.
The SSQD segment was incredibly revealing. We had a vital dispatch from a listener named Brian in Denver regarding toothpaste.
Yeah.
And the level of detail Big Fatty provides here is just staggering. He details his lifelong, unfailing loyalty to Colgate.
Only Colgate.
There is zero room for experimentation, no Crest, no natural Toms of Maine. It has to be Colgate, full stop.
And the mechanical hygiene routine that accompanies that Colgate is just as unyielding as the brand loyalty. Yeah. It is a highly mechanized, deeply entrenched ritual.
Unyielding is the perfect word. Like, he uses an electric brush, but that is merely the first phase. He then relies on a tongue scraper.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets incredibly graphic here, sharing this visceral description of using the scraper to reach all the way into the back of his mouth to drag out what he uniquely refers to as the spinel or the film.
It's so vivid. But sharing such an unvarnished, deeply personal biological detail with thousands of people seems kind of counterintuitive for someone so guarded.
Yeah.
But it actually reinforces this core idea of purification. He is systematically scrubbing out the biological residue of the day. The spinel represents contamination, and the tongue scraper is the tool of eradication.
Okay. But this purification ritual led to a follow-up question from the SSQD that completely derailed the logistics of the evening.
The efficiency hack.
Yeah. The desk pondered a seemingly innocent hack.
Yeah.
What would happen if you just brushed consecutively? Meaning, if you have to brush twice a day, why not do your two brushes back to back in the evening to just get the quota over with?
Which is a wild proposition.
And Big Fatty explains exactly why that is a logistical nightmare. Because if he brushes, uses the Colgate, and gets the brush wet right before bed, he risks his go-to-bed pills kicking in entirely too early.
Right.
He literally risks passing out, draped unconscious over the bathroom sink.
Not to mention the added layer of medical scheduling, because he was also prepping for a fasting window to go see the vampire.
Such a great term.
Which is his brilliant term for getting a blood draw at a 9 a.m. medical appointment. So the timing of his oral hygiene is inextricably linked to his pharmaceutical intake and his fasting schedule.
See, I have to push back on this consecutive toothbrushing defense, though. Let's really look at this.
Okay.
Is calculating the exact absorption rate of your sleeping medication against the time it takes to scrape the spindle off your tongue actually a genius life hack for the medicated? Or is it just a glaring symptom of extreme nighttime paranoia?
Well, I would argue it is a highly evolved, absolutely necessary survival mechanism.
Really?
Yeah. Think about it. When you live alone and you are actively managing the realities of aging, heavy medication timing, and fasting blood work, a fall in the bathroom is not just a minor inconvenience.
No, you're right.
It is a catastrophic event. So what looks like extreme paranoia to someone on the outside is actually a mathematical equation designed to keep him out of the hospital. He calculates the pill timing because the alternative is waking up injured on the tile. The rigid routine is the safety net.
You know, when you frame it as a mathematical equation against catastrophe, the logic totally holds up. So if the beta software, the counterclockwise fan, and the go-to-bed pills secure the internal perimeter, we see that same intense curation applied to the external perimeter.
Exactly.
He actively manages his social friction and his caloric intake to create a highly controlled bridge to the outside world.
And food is always the primary social anchor in this universe. The curation of a menu is essentially the curation of a social experience.
So let's look at the specific menu for Friday at Fatty's, his weekly gathering with his core inner circle. Granny, Durwood, and the Nip.
The classic.
It is a highly specific, comfort-heavy spread. We are talking about a buffalo chicken dip specifically sourced from the Vaughn's East, radish coins, stuffed peppers, fried cabbage, and a sugar-free chocolate pudding topped with whipped topping to cap it all off.
It's a menu designed for community and shared indulgence, yet it remains heavily controlled by the host. Every item serves a specific purpose in fostering a warm, low-stakes environment. But what I find so fascinating is how sharply that elaborate spread contrasts with his solo meals during the rest of the week.
Oh, the solo culinary existence is a completely different landscape.
Yeah.
Like, he recounts sitting alone eating a dill pickle-flavored pasta salad alongside baby back ribs.
Wow.
And then there was the Monday struggle. He is sitting alone, desperate for a little snickersnack because he had only survived on sourdough toast and broth for breakfast. He turns to some peanuts and immediately gets them lodged painfully in his teeth.
The juxtaposition is striking. You have the elaborate multi-course stuffed peppers carefully orchestrated for his friends versus the frustrating, painful peanuts caught in his teeth when he is alone.
Yeah.
It highlights how much psychological energy he pours into social hosting and how utilitarian and sometimes fraught solo survival can be.
Speaking of utilitarian survival, we absolutely cannot skip the fascinating historical tangent that emerged about water pie.
Oh, the water pie reference is a crucial piece of the psychological puzzle here.
It really is.
It came up alongside a dark joke about the impending Second Great Depression. For those unfamiliar, water pie is a literal Great Depression era dessert. It is made out of hot water, a little flour, sugar, and a few tabs of butter.
Water, flour, and sugar. It is literally baking a dessert out of thin air.
Exactly the point. It is the ultimate historical symbol of making something out of nothing when the economy completely collapses. By referencing it, the show grounds Big Fatty's modern-day frugal nature in a deep historical reality.
Right.
The frugal fortress isn't just about saving a few dollars. It is an inherited generational mindset of scarcity and survival.
It is incredible how this analysis weaves Great Depression-era survival recipes right alongside beta iOS software updates. It is that exact same hypervigilance just applied to completely different centuries.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And we see this vigilance play out perfectly in how he manages unpredictable external logistics, like the absolute triumph at a restaurant this week with his lady friend.
Ah, yes, the saga of the returned meal.
The ultimate victory over the service industry. The meal wasn't right, it had to be sent back, and through careful navigation of the situation, it resulted in a completely free dinner for his lady friend.
That's a win.
A huge win. He gleefully recounts thanking the server for their generous offer of nothing. He asserted control over an unpredictable public environment and extracted financial value.
And that intense desire to extract maximum value from external systems bleeds perfectly into the travel planning discussed this week. The planning requires immense precision.
Precision is putting it lightly.
Mm-hmm.
He mentions firing up Hot Travel to lock in a November trip to the mountains in Pigeon Forge, specifically for a Pops concert series.
Right.
He didn't just book on a whim. He waited until the exact concert dates were officially released before pulling the trigger, executing the booking with absolute certainty. But all of that geographical and financial precision completely implodes when we look at his friend the Nip's bizarre flight routing.
Oh my goodness. The Nip's flight itinerary is a masterclass in exploiting airline loyalty programs, even if it defies every known law of geographical sanity.
I am going to lay this out, and I really want you to consider the sheer absurdity of this travel hack, because I have to push back hard on this being a victory.
Okay, let's hear it.
The Nip is trying to travel to Charleston, South Carolina from the East Coast.
Right.
He manages to book a first-class ticket on Alexa Airlines. But to get this ticket, he routes himself entirely across the continental United States to Seattle, Washington, specifically to utilize a 2.5-hour layover so he can sit in their lounge for a free snack.
It is a massive, seemingly counterproductive geographical detour.
It is a total collapse of logic. You are adding countless hours of travel time. You are increasing your risk of delays, cancellations, and lost luggage. You are flying across the entire country just to look at a countdown clock and eat a free snickersnack in a Seattle airport lounge before flying all the way back across the country to Charleston. I have to ask, is this actually the ultimate frugal fortress victory of extracting value from an airline? Or is it just a complete delusion driven by frequent flyer miles?
See, I will take that framing a step further. I think it is the deliberate collapse of physical geography in favor of social status.
Interesting.
Yeah, in the frugal fortress mindset, the psychological value of sitting in a first-class lounge consuming free, exclusive amenities vastly outweighs the physical toll of the mileage.
Oh, I see.
The logic isn't about finding the fastest route from point A to point B. It is about the most luxurious, status-driven extraction of resources from a massive corporation. The free snack in Seattle is a trophy.
Extracting resources from Alexa Airlines, one cross-country lounge snack at a time. I mean, it's maddening, but I see the psychological appeal.
Right.
But these external audits don't stop at travel hacks. He's also relentlessly tracking the community's milestones, or as the nomenclature of this universe clinically demands they be called, exits from the birth canal.
The birthday roll call serves as a vital piece of the social architecture here. It isn't just reading names, it's maintaining a network.
Yeah. This week, he celebrates Brendan in the UK, who is a recently delurked listener. And he makes sure to specifically note that Brendan previously won a cash money prize from his bacon.
Crucial detail.
Then he celebrates Brisbane, taking the time to note Brisbane's deep historical ties to something called the Miserable Entertainment Complex and past Pride events.
Because by tracking these exits from the birth canal so meticulously, he is actively building and maintaining a remote social safety net.
Yeah, exactly.
If you remember everyone's personal history, their geographic location, and even their cash money wins, you are cementing your place at the center of a community. You are never truly isolated, even if you are just sitting alone in the villa on a Monday eating dill pickle pasta salad.
The perimeter is secure. The beta software is loaded. The friends are fed. The airline lounges have been successfully exploited, and the birthdays are logged.
Yeah.
And here is where it gets absolutely fascinating. Because he has exerted this unyielding, ironclad control over his toothpaste, his fans, and his community logistics, he earns the psychological safety to open the escape hatch.
The reality television escape hatch.
Yes, he opens the floodgates to completely unhinged, televised chaos. The summer quiz program diet is incredibly heavy this week. He is tracking the premiere of Press Your Luck with Elizabeth Banks.
And shouting, no whammies, of course.
Of course. He is monitoring a 10-game super champ on Jeopardy. And he is eagerly looking forward to the impending premieres of Nation's Dumbest, Kitchen Nightmares, and Celebrity Millionaire.
It is a relentless, exhausting schedule of external low-stakes conflict. It is highly manufactured drama that he can simply turn off with a remote control.
Right.
And the suspension of disbelief gets even more surreal when we look at the dancing competitions.
Oh, Dancing with the Stars, the next pro. He breaks down the entire cast structure, 6 men, 6 women. He specifically zeroes in on a set of Italian brothers with shaved heads, noting how lovely they are.
Yeah.
But the brilliant part of this analysis is his casual observation about the production itself. Because of the specific set design and the lighting, he concludes that the show must be filmed in the future in Washington, D.C.
Which is just amazing. What strikes me is how willingly he allows his mind to completely abandon the rigid logic that governs his waking hours.
Totally.
When the television turns on, the coupon arithmetic stops. He fully embraces the illusion of the production, which perfectly sets the stage for the absolute crown jewel of the week's media diet.
Oh, the Big Brother season premiere.
Right.
And we must enthusiastically remind everyone right now, Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. Lock it into your schedules.
Write it down.
Because this season's premiere is beyond anything resembling reality. It features an insane time machine theme where a literal spinning table hurls the house guests through different historical eras.
The tonal shift from monitoring security camera batteries to recounting time travel is breathtaking.
It really is. He details these incredibly bizarre, disjointed Big Brother moments with total sincerity. One group of house guests spins back to a 1970s mall, landing specifically in a Spencer's gift set, complete with an obnoxious blonde worker where the background music suddenly just stops.
Oh, boy.
Another group is hurled into a jungle where Jeff Probst, crossing over from Survivor in a massive network synergy event, finds a mysterious message meant for the jungle gods.
Synergy at its finest.
And then we get the dramatic return of reality TV veterans Rick Devins and Angela, who he affectionately refers to as Crazy Eyes.
It is an absolute sensory overload. It is a collision of pop culture references, network cross-promotion, and deeply manufactured drama.
Yeah.
But the peak absurdity, the moment where the frugal fortress mentality completely surrenders to the screen, happens during the prehistoric time travel sequence.
The prehistoric sequence is peak Big Brother absurdity. They travel back to caveman times. A literal physical dinosaur comes out of nowhere and chases a contestant named Rachel up to the top of an active volcano.
Oh, right.
Rachel falls into the volcano and officially dies in the context of the game. And because she is dead, the infamous Chinbot, a literal robot with a prominent chin, just casually sneaks into the house, sits down at the time travel table, and takes her place in the game.
And sandwiched right in the middle of this prehistoric volcano death and robotic infiltration, we have deeply emotional, highly intense human drama.
Of course.
Jason, the drag queen, is having a full breakdown. He is crying because he is overwhelmed by the sheer lack of straight people he usually surrounds himself with in his daily life. And Angela, crazy eyes, steps in to comfort him, holding him and promising that she will take care of him.
It's just wild. So what does this all mean? I really have to pose an analogy here to wrap our heads around this.
Go for it.
Think about the extreme tonal whiplash we are witnessing. How does a man who calculates the exact 1% battery drain of his security camera and who manually adjusts the rotational direction of his ceiling fan to fight the summer heat completely suspend his disbelief to watch a reality TV star get thrown into a volcano by a dinosaur only to be replaced by a robot?
It's a great question.
Right. I would argue that the TV screen acts as a psychological containment field. The rigid reality of the villa makes the absurdity of the television screen absolutely necessary for his survival.
Yes, that is the exact psychological mechanism at play. When you live a life of highly managed, isolated routine, you naturally crave chaos. The human brain needs unpredictability.
Yeah.
But you only crave that chaos if it is safely contained behind a pane of glass.
The dinosaur isn't in his backyard.
Precisely. The dinosaur isn't breaching the frugal fortress. The volcano isn't a threat to the security cameras. Because his real life is governed by strict rules, public beta downloads, and consecutive toothbrushing logistics, he has absolutely zero tolerance for real-world drama. But a drag queen crying next to a time travel table while a robot replaces a dead contestant, that is a consequence-free emotional roller coaster.
It is an escape hatch that only functions because the hinges on the frugal fortress door are so incredibly well-oiled.
Well,
if his real life was chaotic, if the cameras were dead, if the toothpaste was the wrong brand, if the ceiling fan was spinning clockwise and blowing hot air, he wouldn't have the mental bandwidth to care about Chinbot.
Exactly.
The absolute uncompromising control of his microenvironment is what grants him permission to surrender to the macro absurdity of the screen.
And that is exactly why we must remember Big Brother's on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights.
Right.
It isn't just a television schedule. It is the scheduled release valve for the immense pressure of maintaining perfection in everyday life.
We have seen how strict, almost obsessive routines like unfailing brand loyalty to Colgate or meticulously testing the environmental drain on a battery act as the anchor that allows a person to enjoy complete unhinged chaos safely. So, I want you to look at your own life. What rigid, seemingly meaningless daily routine are you clinging to? Not because it is actually necessary for your survival, but because it is the secret anchor keeping you tethered while the rest of your world spins completely out of control.
It is a really profound question worth exploring the next time you find yourself obsessing over a minor, insignificant detail in your day.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's analysis. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We warmly invite you back right here for next Sunday's show as we continue to map out this wild, wonderful universe. See you then.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat.